This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
He brought back!
Here, the guests get everything they want, but they don't even know what they want. They just need to feel special. Welcome to the White Lotus.
Surprise!
Mom!
Am I interrupting? I know it's only your honeymoon. Oh my God, look at her face. Rachel, you were such a beautiful bride, but also very pale. But now you have a little more color and it looks great. Thanks.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila, and Arvin. Today, we're pretty excited, actually, to review a show that we've been watching over the last couple of weeks, and that is HBO's White Lotus, or rather, The White Lotus, which is a comedy drama dark satire, I think you could call it, and it's written and directed by Mike White.
It's a weird one because on the one hand, if you just want beautiful locales, Hawaii, sun-swept beaches and beautiful hotels, it's all there. On the other hand, you just really dislike all the people in the show so much that it's this weird like, oh, if this is what the world outside is like, maybe I'd rather not be there.
No, I mean, but that's such a HBO thing, right? For HBO to do, it's like at this point in time, just as people are starting to like really miss traveling and really miss like vacations and going to some remote island somewhere, romanticizing the idea of like vacations and stuff, HBO releases this show and goes like, here are a few reasons why travel is a complete bummer and you are better off being at home, away and isolated from all the other people in the world. Because that's basically what this is, right? There is no like big concept. It's not a high concept thing at all. It's just people being people on vacation, like on holiday. And they are absolutely like terrible at it.
Very
like
rich people though.
Very rich people on vacation.
So I've been excited for White Lotus for a while now, ever since I first heard that Mike White was coming out with a new anthology series and then saw the cast list, because the cast list is mega stacked. It's got a lot of sort of comedy heavyweights, but also heavyweights in general, because you've got Connie Britton, you've got Steve Zahn, you've also got Murray Bartlett, Alexandra Daddario, Jake Lacy, Natasha Rothwell. It just goes on and on and on. It's a very big list. But what you need to know to figure out if this is a show for you, I think it is a show for most people if you have a slightly weird sensibility, is that the White Lotus is a resort in Hawaii, essentially. And that's where the whole series is set. And it follows along the travails and disappointments and groanings, essentially, of a bunch of rich people who are vacationing there. And that perhaps makes it sound less bearable than it actually is, because the show is while the show is interested in looking at things like class and race and all that, it's also just very, I don't know how to describe it. It's got a very strange rhythm to the way that it chooses to attack it. It's got a very strange subtlety, and the performances are so good. It's really dark and it's really funny.
You know, if you want to talk about HBO doing comedy, I feel like this is what they think comedy is. It reminded me of the rhythm, as you said, of things like 6 Feet Under, where things that are not really funny are made to be funny, but in a way that also makes you feel uncomfortable. But I don't mean that as a bad thing. Like, this is such a, I can't stop watching the show. Every episode feels like it ends too quickly. And you know, when you have such a huge ensemble cast, it often happens that some people are interesting, and then when they cut to certain people, you are like, oh, when will their part end? I want to go back to someone else. That never happens with this show. Every character that they focus on, every bit of weirdness or cringiness, you're there for it. It's just so entertaining and so absorbing. I also wanted to say that the thing I like a lot about the show is how claustrophobic it is. It's claustrophobic because you've basically been forced to vacation on an island with a group of people that you really don't like.
Yeah, and cringy is such a good word, because so much of it is so, so cringy. I think if People Watching was a show, or more like if Fly on a Wall was a show, this would be like the show, because sometimes you're put in the middle of people's conversations, very personal conversations, and it gets like super real and uncomfortable and awkward, and you just want to leave. But at the same time, it's very entertaining to be in the middle of these people without being quote unquote seen as the audience member, that you just want to stay. And it's just seeing people like sort of either unravel or build on top of themselves or interact with one another, and how they just have this weird chemistry as families or as newlyweds or whatever it is, right? All wrapped in this like super bright and shiny, pristine looking wrapper, which is the White Lotus. So it's very contradictory in that way. And I love it. I mean, I love this show. I love like every single episode so far. But I'm just saying that it is a very uncomfortable show to watch.
Sometimes after I finish an episode, I need to decompress. Like I feel the need to just jump up and down and wave my hands for a bit to like depressurize, because the cringe is so intense while watching the show. And I think that it would be very easy to dismiss the show as poor little rich boy and leave it at that and say that every character is just that. But that's really not the case. And part of it has to do with what you said, Arvind, that watching the chemistry and the interactions build. The other part of it is that there is a push and pull between the holidayers and the people who are actually there to provide the holiday experience. And it is, I think, in some ways about the pressure that is placed on both sides, right? The pressure placed on holiday goers to have a great time because it's Hawaii and you have to love it, even if you're not sure about your marriage, even if your family is just truly the pits, even if, you know, all these different things. And on the flip side, it's also for the people who have to ride around in their small cars to this luxury holiday place every day, be perfectly tucked in, provide perfect service constantly. And it really is about that push and pull. I think the performances really showcase that tension to the nth degree.
I think that idea of the upstairs, downstairs has never not been interesting, right? I mean, if you think of even Downton Abbey, for instance, being able to see how two very different classes of people are forced to interact and rub up against each other, this takes that to like level 100. Because what I like is that it's not that the people who are the providers of the service are amazing, wonderful people. They all have their own problems or challenges, but there is a class divide and it's very significant, and the show doesn't make any bones about it. So it plays on those power dynamics, but it also plays on how the people who don't visibly have power sometimes play with the system and give themselves a little bit of satisfaction for having got one over the rich guy. I don't know. It's a very clever show. It manages to do that really well. It also manages to do that because we recognize the types that they are showing us, right? If you've been on a holiday, you know the couple that looks like they're the perfect couple, but you sense some weirdness underneath, the bratty family, the person who's kind of on her own and doesn't, you know, sort of makes everyone feel a little bit uncomfortable by being a little too familiar with you. You recognize these people. And so you immediately wonder what it'd be like if you were there, or whether you're one of those people.
And that is like true HBO fashion storytelling, right? It's like they never tell you who you're supposed to root for. They never tell you who's the good guy. There's no protagonist, antagonist. It's always a mixture of everyone's good and everyone's bad, and everyone just reacts to a different situation differently. And they make you pick and choose. Like in one episode, you might not like you know, this person X. And then in the next episode, you're like, oh, I really like this person because what they say makes sense. And then within that same episode, the second hour, you're like, oh, this person's horrible and does like terrible things and I don't like them anymore. So it's all a matter of like picking, choosing, building your own puzzle of who you like and who you want to root for. And you might actually end up not rooting for them at all by the end of the series, which we don't know yet what that's going to be like.
And framing this whole thing, right? Framing all this discomfort and all these interactions is a central mystery. And I think that that's part of what the show does. Right at the beginning of the episode, the first episode, it essentially tells you that something bad is going to happen. And then from then on, you watch everything in the show knowing that it is leading up to that bad moment, but you don't know what is going to happen to who. And I think the way the show toys with that makes it about that, but also not about that. is kind of a thing of beauty. It's a very odd show. We are talking today about The White Lotus, which is available on HBO. As we are speaking, 5 episodes out of 6 have come out. And it's just kind of great. We want to know if you've been watching it as well. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9.
Hello, everybody. You are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila and Arvin. And today we're talking about the really idiosyncratic experience of watching HBO's The White Lotus. And we've been talking in generalities about the characters and the actors, because partly there are so many that I think to deep dive each story is going to take us forever. Suffice to say, there is an unhappy family, there is an unhappy single woman, there is an unhappy married couple, and there are a bunch of unhappy people, you know, in the hotel trying to get by. So I wanted to know, though, what you make of the performances, because I really think the performances, the writing is sharp. There's no doubt about that. The editing, the visual sense of the show, it's all there. But none of it would work if the performances, I feel, weren't so note perfect.
I said earlier that I sort of loved every character and didn't mind spending time with any of them. And I think a lot of that goes down to the performances. Every character is cast so well, from the way they look to the way they play the role. Every character, I feel, elicits exactly the kind of reaction that they want to from you. Whether it's the teenage girls, whether it's the newly married husband, who you frankly just want to punch most of the time. But They are so good at their roles that I don't know that I can imagine anyone else playing these characters.
Same. But I specifically got very excited when I saw Steve Zahn's name pop up, because I didn't know that he was in this series. And I've been a fan of him for like a long, long time. I love his comedy work. I love the movies that he's in. And he's been in some real like oddball, sometimes borderline super raunchy comedies from the mid-2000s. And I'm a fan of all of them. So when I saw that he was involved, I got really happy. You do get like a very rude introduction to Steve Zahn, just like fair warning if you haven't seen this show. But yeah, he's good at doing drama. He's also good at playing that role of like very politically incorrect, doesn't know what he's saying, constantly has food in his mouth sort of type. But at the same time, the guy has range. So just seeing him show up in a HBO show with this kind of prestige and this kind of caliber, able to build chemistry with so many other actors, I just singled him out. Like, I love Steve Zahn being there.
I was excited to see Jennifer Coolidge and Connie Britton, actually, because for different reasons. Jennifer Coolidge, because the discomfort that she radiates on screen is something else. Connie Britton, because Friday Night Lights, I will always love her. But I think in watching, I was excited to see them, and then they came and delivered so hard in such different ways, because Connie Britton's character is so tightly laced up, right? And so trying so hard to stay in control. And the way she does that while also still being interesting to watch is really something else. Jennifer Coolidge is unhinged, and it's a glorious thing. But the people
speaking of unhinged, can I just give props to Murray Bartlett as the hotel manager. He is so amazing.
That's who I was going to say. So I'm not that familiar with Murray Bartlett, but he plays Armand, who is, you know, at the start, your seemingly perfect, high-functioning hotel manager, and then it just disintegrates. And the way he does it, the tightness of the smile under the mustache is just is something else. And I didn't know that Alexandra Daddario was this good an actress. So I just have been so pleasantly surprised by the performances. I don't think anyone's put a foot wrong.
So you said the expression beneath, the expression beneath. And I think that's real for most of these people, except Jennifer Coolidge, who really, you know, has no filter in the show. They all have a facade that they need to present and what they're really feeling inside. And the interesting thing is this applies across the board, even with the so-called rich people. They're all presenting or playing a part that's not necessarily who they are inside. And I think that's partly what makes these performances so interesting.
So I should have checked before we did this show, but was this based on a book? Is The White Lotus based on a book, or is it like an original screenplay thing? Because the way it moves, and Lynn, you mentioned rhythm, and it works like a book. Normally this much depth and this much sort of like quote-unquote analysis or this much time given to each and every character, you'd normally get that when you read books like this. Even the storyline, even the kind of atmosphere, even the sort of world building that it does, it feels very much like it's based, like it's a very truthful adaptation. But I have no idea if it's actually based on a book or not.
It's an original series written by Mike White.
Wow. And I think that sense of control and that sense of almost perfectionism that's kicking in each episode comes from the fact that it's the series creator is also its writer and director, because then you get sort of this singular vision, and that's why it feels like it's an adaptation of perhaps not a book, but a vision is definitely what it feels like. I also wanted to... I don't know. I wanted to mention that we've talked about the haves and have-nots, right, in the show. But another part of it is there's also a push and pull between old and new, between woke and unwoke. And I think that that's partly why the show is so uncomfortable for everyone. Because I think if you are a younger person who is immersed in, say, what is politically correct and how to master and even weaponize that language, then there are things in here that you will feel very uncomfortable about. There are characters who really do that, who push that to the absolute limits. But if, on the other hand, you're also somebody who's maybe a bit more comfortable with the status quo, shall we say, and, you know, just welcome to history, welcome to America, there are also things in here that will skewer that. Basically, I think the show is really merciless about who it skewers. It's multi-directional and it's uncomfortable for everyone.
Yes, 100%, because... nobody seems like they're doing these things for the right reasons. Even the ones who claim to be politically correct or, so, you know, thinking about the world, a lot of it feels performative. And it's a thing that we recognize, right? Like, we recognize that performative political correctness from social media. I found that interesting. I found the fact that the show went there quite interesting, because ultimately it doesn't take any side. But on the other hand, I'm wondering whether then that's a safe way to be, because you kind of get to have your fun and, well, you get to have your cake and eat it too, really.
Can I also say, though, that the music in the show is amazing. Like, the music is its own thing, like its own character. Really, really helps the show move along. And it also does what we've been talking about, like makes you feel like really uncomfortable. It builds on suspense, even though sometimes the mystery isn't that big or isn't anything at all. It's just like, you know, does someone know something else? The music that kicks in makes it feel like either like a horror movie or like a horror show or something where it's like a super high concept thriller. It's really good. And I don't know who the composer is. I wish I looked it up again. But then, yeah, I love the music in the show.
So Cristobal Tapia de Vier is the person who did the music. And he also did the music for Utopia, which was a British TV series. So not necessarily someone that I'm familiar with. But I agree, because I think what we've been talking about this whole time about the strange rhythm, about the discomfort, a huge part of that is contributed to by the music, because sometimes people are just walking along a corridor and then suddenly you hear the ha, 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 and you're like, oh my God, what is going to happen?
So the other thing I realized that adds to this atmosphere, and this is something I'm growing to appreciate more and more as more TV shows do this, is the episodic structure, because they release it one episode at a time, right? So there's just enough cringe and weirdness and discomfort for you to sit with and think about and ruminate over until the next episode comes. And so I think this show has real value in deciding to be structured that way.
Yeah. Speaking of new episodes, so we just learned today that there's going to be a season two. Like, a season two is going to drop next year, the year after. I don't know if they've confirmed it. Do you guys want to see a season two? So at this point, we don't know how this show is going to end. We haven't seen the finale. Depending on how it wraps up, are you excited for season two? Because for me personally, I was kind of happy with it being a miniseries and just ending with the 6 episodes. But also, I would like to spend more time with these people, or not spend more time with these people, depending on where they go. So I don't know.
So the next series is apparently going to be set on a different White Lotus. So this White Lotus is in Hawaii. And I guess in the same way that you have your Hiltons and your Marriotts around the world, this is going to be set at another White Lotus. And so for that reason, I'm excited, because I think it's going to be Mike White again, which means that we're going to get the same sure hand and the same strangeness that permeates the series. And then you get to tell a whole bunch of new characters. You get to tell a whole bunch of new stories. And I don't know, imagine it in Bali. Like, I would watch that. I would really watch that.
So that's what I was going to say, that I like the idea of this concept with new characters. I could do with Armand. Maybe, you know, he needs to shift hotels and work somewhere else. I know, if he survives.
Ooh.
I could do with some people sort of crossing over. But yeah, I'm quite happy for this concept with new actors and new stories.
Yeah, if it's going to be a complete anthology, then yeah, you can give me like 5-6 seasons, like an American Horror Story kind of thing. The crossing over, I don't know. I would like it to be packed in, like just tight 6 episodes, 7, 8 episodes, finish the arcs of these people and then move on to something else.
I mean, I love it. I really am excited for the finale of this one, but also to see what happens next, mostly because how horrible can we go? Way, way horrible. That's what the show tells us. So we're talking today about The White Lotus, which the first season of which is available on HBO. We're almost at the end of the first season, so you have time to catch up. You have time to join in. Let us know if you've seen it and liked it or didn't, maybe. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio, and write to us at movies@bfm.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.